something is disappearing from public schools. Two-thirds of them in Josephine County do not offer any art classes. This is according to the Oregon Department of Education. It found that while most of Medford schools do offer some music classes, not visual arts, new media, theater, or dance. Here's a student from one of those schools where the arts have been cut.
Back in sixth grade, I found out that drawing helped me relieve some of the stress and anger I'd been building up at home and at school. Sometimes I just felt like I needed to leave, so I would draw myself a truck and drive away. I started drawing superheroes a lot because I thought they were cool. Later, I found out that I really just needed someone to save me. I created dozens of different heroes and plenty of new worlds. I created other worlds that I registered as perfect. There weren't any bullies or people there to put you down.
We're going to hear more from middle school students in our region and what puts them down and what lifts them up. We're also going to hear from a guy who started a foundation to inspire young artists and their teachers. Abram Katz is co-founder and education director for the Hartazon Foundation and the leader of On Task, organizing new teaching approaches in school communities. Its mission? Bridging the gap between schools and community resources. Abram, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Could you tell us a bit more about On Task and that gap that you're trying to fill?
Well, it's a gap that's been there since I've been in middle school. And being this sensitive, creative artist type, I didn't feel like I was having my needs met in school, so I had to go and find them outside. So that meant after-school programs or just hanging out in my bedroom drawing and playing with Legos.
And On Task, how many after-school programs versus in-school programs are you taking on right now?
Well, this is the most exciting piece for me right now. I have been partnering with public schools for the last 3 years in the Southern Oregon region. And so after founding the Hartazon Foundation in November of 2016, we are going to be providing after-school programs, creative arts, entrepreneurial training, film production. The list is going to go on and on as funding comes in. And so we're just very excited to provide that opportunity, and we'll be starting February 20th in Grants Pass, Oregon, and hopefully very soon expanding some of our services to the larger area here.
Which school in Grants Pass?
We're going to have our own school.
Oh, really?
All right. So the Hartazon Youth Center will be downtown Grants Pass, and this is going to be an after-school program from 2 to 4.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're also...
I'm sorry, 4 to 6.
4 to 6, right. 2 to 4 yeah. would be a little bit of hooky involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And to no check hooky. My list here, On Task, this organizing new teaching
yes.
approaches in school communities, you're already involved in Rouge Community School, in Chiloquin, in Talent, Walker Elementary in Ashland, Highland mm-hmm. Elementary, Mira Vista Elementary, Aurora Day School, and Hellman Elementary. Tell us some more about the things you're doing. What kinds of classes or programs do you put in these schools?
Well, right now things are shifting quite a bit. So I have been partnering with daytime teachers, bringing the creative arts into typically the language arts, sometimes social studies class. And the basis of what I do is social-emotional learning, and we are bringing humanity into the schools. And what I mean by that is encouraging meaningful connections to develop between the teachers and the students. And while teachers would love to have that, and a lot of the time that's what motivates them to become teachers in the first place, they simply don't have the time or the... sometimes they have the resources, but often they don't have the backup. And what I mean by that is being alone in a classroom of 30 kids, no matter how great you are or how attentive the students are, you're still alone on an island with all the weight of the world on your shoulders. And so what I'm trying to do is come in and offer a little bit of relief and perspective for the teachers. And to do that, we're partnering with the School of Education here at SOU.
Mm-hmm.
And so... at Rouge Community School, which we worked at for 3 years, bringing a digital storytelling class to them, we actually, each time we taught the class, I would bring four very passionate, very excited education majors here to obtain their practicum. And they, in effect, become classroom teachers. So now there's six teachers in a room versus one. So the daytime teacher can take a step back and gain perspective and have some of those meaningful personal connections, like I said, they typically got into the business for. And they have a blast. The level of engagement that happens between the teacher and student, you know, increases, both of them.
And in 3 years of doing this at the Rouge Community School, what kinds of feedback have you gotten from the regular teachers, people who maybe had 30 students and then had help?
Yes. At our, what was it called, the SOAR presentation last year, we asked the teacher what her experience was, what she got out of it, and she just started crying.
Oh, wow.
She was saying that having people in the room with her, partnering with her, and coming at the education, the academic process, coming at her job from a team teaching approach, again, versus this kind of isolated reality, made her feel supported in the way that we are trying to support underserved communities. The teachers are also underserved in this way of just simply having to do it alone.
We're talking with Abram Katz about putting some humanity into our schools. He is the education director and co-founder of the Hartisan Foundation. And you can bring us your stories from the classroom, from your own kids' lives, from your life in middle and elementary school, and what the arts and having a more team-oriented approach maybe meant to you. Join us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to hear some more from the students you've worked with, Abram. 3 years now in Rouge, and we've got a young man here who wrote his story down talking about creativity.
As a child, I was full of creativity and imagination. I make strange and creative stories. They seem chaotic and random to me now, full of unorganized thought. Now I can't find that kind of raw creativity within me. Some may call it maturity or adulthood, but it's more like death. Did we just use up all the creativity? Or does it get killed in public schools, a system based on conformity rather than individuality, where adults shove facts into children's brains, labeling someone average and basing others around them?
Some call it maturity, but it's more like death. From the mouth of a middle schooler there, Abram, do you agree with his summation that public schools are actually maybe killing creativity or at least have a problem with it?
They could use some help.
In what ways?
The pieces that have been taken away, such as the creative arts, and then what I say, the basic humanity piece, it's not that people are trying to cause harm. Like I said, everyone's pretty well-intentioned. There's just so many standards that we have to hit. There's so much testing and so much pressure for the from the top down, all the way from, you know, administration to teachers to students, that there's not a moment to breathe. And that's the first thing that I teach the interns, is that if you can't take about a 2 second breath before you teach, you might want to look at that. I'll rephrase that, but I encourage them to take a 2 second breath before they begin their lecture. And it's the hardest thing. It's like falling through space. And really, if you try it, we don't take those pauses. So I guess that's what I'm saying, is that it affords us to be able to create space. And within that space, there's a lot that rushes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you, we just spoke with Speaker of the Oregon House, Tina Kotek. Mm-hmm. She referenced the $180 billion shortfall in the state's budget, mm-hmm. versus the services that it's set to provide, mm-hmm. by law. How can an organization like the Hartisan Foundation or On Task step into that gap and find the funding to help schools as they navigate not just not being able to pay for things like, uh-huh. like humanities or digital storytelling or some of the arts that we have seen disappear from public schools?
So I have a lot of current exciting stories around that. And, of course, I won't give you the specifics or names of people and organizations. When we announced that we will be bringing creative arts and heart-based learning into schools and after schools, people clamor to get on board. And when we approach funders, we say, we have an opportunity for you to be involved in something that has meaning and purpose and kind of connect you to the pulse that you may be not as engaged with. And so far, it's all yeses. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about actually revenue from the community and from people of affluence, as well as businesses and organizations that really want to connect their brand to something meaningful.
Speaking of that meaning, mm-hmm. I'd like to get as many student voices into this program as we can. We have another one from a young lady in the On Task program, and she says she felt like she needed to escape middle school.
Kaylee found herself climbing an endless wall just to reach confirmation that she fit in. It hadn't always been this hard. Kaylee used to be okay, but then came middle school. Middle school is a purgatory between elementary and high school. All the pressure was on her to be like everyone else, and it felt like she was being held down by two 100-pound weights, and it's getting hard for her to handle.
So that story recorded by a middle schooler you worked with, Abram, how have you seen storytelling and especially the digital storytelling programs become therapy for kids during this, this tough life transition?
It's a great question, and I see a similar, or I was going to say the same result almost every time. So when we come into a classroom and announce that we are creating a safe space and that people aren't going to be judged and that there's a new school culture, at least for an hour, of inclusivity and celebration of diversity, and the kids in the first day or two begin opening up in a way that they tell me they've never have before. And then when we do a post-survey, we ask them really simply what you got out of the class and what skills, you know, you feel like you've improved on. And they say all kinds of cool academic stuff, but I got to express myself. And then they say, I got to talk about my feelings. And then they say, I didn't think I was going to make it in this way. And we do deal with, you know, depression all the way up to suicidal ideation in middle school. It's a very tough time. And a lot of the kids, if not honestly, most of them say having their voice heard, being met in that place of sincerity and genuine caring made it so that they wanted to be here. Here being school, planet Earth, in their bodies having a human experience.
And to give people a better idea of the form these stories might take, it seems like the kids, they write about themselves in the third person, narrate their story, and then create a video or a visual component with imagery. I want to ask first, what's the thought behind having people write about themselves in the third person?
Okay. So it's not always third person, but it is honestly my favorite way to help students look at harder issues, deeper underlying experiences that they're having that they might not be comfortable talking about otherwise. And it's also helps protect them, meaning if their story is shared outside of class and someone says, well, who's the angry bear that yells at your house? And they say, oh, they have an out. They can say, that's just a fictional character I created. And it's really up to them to share or not share what they feel comfortable with. It's kind of a protection of the heart. So mm-hmm. while we're trying to expand that and create space for that, we also need to be very cautious and vigilant that we're not re-traumatizing anybody or creating a space that wouldn't be anything but safe.
Have you been surprised by the level of trauma and heavy duty stuff you're hearing middle schoolers talk about in their own lives?
Not surprised.
Not surprised.
No.
Can you give us a characterization of that?
Well, here's a character sitting before you. I was a very emotional, I don't know if that's the right word, but I experienced a lot of intensity in my childhood. And so the way that I dealt with that was to basically wall up, shut down. I call it lockdown. It's pretty much like when there's a shooter outside and you got to just protect yourself. And I didn't have the tools or resources or understanding the emotional intelligence, social emotional intelligence to work through that stuff. So I just created a barrier. And so one of the things that motivates me to go into the schools is to provide this type of environment, this type of culture where we can support one another through that.
Were you bullied in middle school?
Some.
Some.
But I pretty much just avoided human contact.
I see.
You know?
If you're just joining us, luckily Abram Katz is no longer avoiding contact. He's co-founder and education director of the Hartisan Foundation and the leader of Organizing New Teaching Approaches in School Communities, or On Task. If you have stories from middle school or your own questions or comments about this organization that is providing after-school programs and arts opportunities to students that might otherwise or wouldn't otherwise have them, we'd love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org to send us an email. Another thing, Abram, that seems to come up with a lot of these young people is bullying. Mm-hmm. I want to go to another student's story in his own words.
I weigh 195 pounds, which is a lot for my age. Well, yeah, I get bullied for it almost every day and every week. But hey, it's better than last year where I get bullied 24/7. I get bullied a lot for my weight, like I'm fatter than the Zeppelin. It always made me sad, or even mad if they pushed it too far. I have a bad thing where it makes it really hard to lose weight. I once exercised for 2 hours every week 3 times during the summer. I lost 20 pounds in 2 months. Which really sucks, because I spent most of my summer exercising, and I was exhausted. I was eating real farm-made meat and veggies that don't use GMOs either. After those 2 months of pain, I gave up. I still eat really healthy, but I don't exercise that much. But when people bully me, I get confused. But I don't really show it so the bullies don't think it gets to me. I usually just tell them, "Good job, you found out," sarcastically. On my way home, I think about my family. They are the only ones that really and truly understand me. Also, there used to be a kid that went to my school who made fun of me. Now, this really confused me because he was in the same position, same weight, hard to run like me. But when he made fun of me for my weight, I would laugh and walk away. Then one day, I went to talk to him about it. He said he only did it to make himself feel better. We walked and became great friends. I really hope before I finish off school, bullying stops.
You just heard the voice of a student here in the Medford School District, part of our listening area, talking about being bullied. Abram, that was very candid. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you get students to talk so candidly about bullying and their struggles in middle school.
A lot of it has to do with the tone that's set in the first week of class. Some could say it's wasting time because we're not getting to the, you know, meat of what we're going for, but I think it's the setup really that is everything. So I spend a good 2 to 3 classes just working on the classroom community. Like I said, letting them know that they're safe, doing all types of interactive activities and exercises that really demonstrate that shared humanity piece. And the rest kind of happens naturally. It reminds me of permaculture, where they set up these ecosystems or guilds and then hang out in the hammock and watch everything grow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, or the glass balls that have just what the brine shrimp inside need to survive.
You got it.
Unfortunately, though, that's not how the world works. It made me think earlier when you talked about these teachers that were so grateful to have SOU, Southern Oregon University education students, step into the classroom and collaborate with them. That has an expiration date on it. Now, how long are the students in the class, and is there almost a postpartum depression for the teachers that have to go back to the way things were?
In following up with them, they let me know that the culture that was created actually sustains. It's a rhythm or a pulse that continues, an energy. And so far, I've had teachers say that they really miss us, but that it made a tangible, measurable shift in the way in which they presented information to the students and their students' ability to receive that information.
And when you take on a new school, for example, or actually I want to hear more about this Hartisan Center in Grants Pass that's opening up in February, part of the Hartisan Foundation. That's not in a school. It's not an after-school program. It's a youth center, open 4 to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. What's in store for that?
So this is specifically a youth advocacy center and empowerment program. while I was listening to that last student, he actually presented along with four of our interns at SOAR, Southern Oregon Arts and Research. Did
yeah,
I get
there
that
you go.
Right?
Yes.
Phew. And he received a standing ovation for his digital story. And then he presented to a room packed with educators and students where his story came from. And he got very flustered. And people were encouraging him to continue talking. And so he went ahead and just made a stance and said, this is what bullying is, and this is what I'm not willing to stand for and what I do stand for. And I kind of got the hit that we should just have everyone stand for him. And they rose and applauded him. And that's when I get the tears and fall over. And
right, I listened to that his story several times. I thought it was so insightful how he noticed the people that would bully him mm-hmm. had their own insecurities. And a lot of that was motivating that. We've just got about a minute left here. Is there mm-hmm. anything I haven't asked you about that's important for people to understand about the work you're doing?
Well, I guess to continue on that thought in regards to the Hardison Foundation, we are bringing those types of relationships that I just explained. We're creating an environment for that to happen on a daily basis, to not just kind of what you said, be a one-off and then leave. So our programs are going to be creative writing and film production, and those students will then go into an entrepreneurial training program that will be quite extensive, and that'll be happening during the summer. So there's this ongoing relationship, and at that point that those kids feel ready to go out into the business world, we're going to be supporting them to do so.
Sounds like a lot of interesting things are in store for the Hardison Foundation and On Task. The education director is Abram Katz. We are going to go out with some music here created by Far West High students of Oakland, a previous project of yours. And I want to thank you, Abram Katz, for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
All right.